Welcome to the Ice Lab Podcast. We are your hosts, Michael Marinaro and Trent Michaud.
We are going to take you deep into our labs, as well as many different high-performance professionals we've connected with on our journey as we strive for excellence. Welcome to episode number 17 of the Ice Lab Podcast. Mr. Marinaro, how are we doing on this fine Wednesday evening?
It's going good. I think I'm doing a little bit better than yourself. Trent and I just got off the disc golf course. Trent had a bit of a struggle. First time we played since he had his first big win against me, and did not quite go as planned for him. He lost two discs, was very frustrated, and was close to some real tears. Without exaggerating, he was close to some tears on the disc golf course today. So needless to say, I beat him by about 9 or 10 strokes. I had some fun. I don't think Trent had much fun, but we're throwing plastic at metal poles outside. It was a beautiful, beautiful night here at the end of September. So I think we got to try and enjoy it a little bit more next time there, eh, Trent?
Yeah, it was frustrating losing the two discs. If I hadn't lost the two discs, I might have been a little bit better. I wasn't that close to crying, Mike. That's a little over-exaggerated, but it was frustrating. I hit like a 40, almost 50-foot putt. Normally, all of us would go nuts. I hit it, and I just keep walking to the next hole. Mike picks up my putter for me, and I just keep walking head down. But no, I'd still enjoyed going out. It's still fun going out with you. Just a little frustrated at losing two discs and some bad tee shots today. Needed to let you get your confidence back after taking you down. That's all it was, Mike.
It's taken you 3 months to beat me once. It's going to take a little bit more than that for you to beat me two times in a row, bud.
That's okay. You've been playing for over a year more than me, and I beat you that in 3 months after playing for 3 months, and you've been playing for a year and a half.
Testament to my teaching skills, I guess.
We'll go with that. We'll go with that, Mikey. Besides that, what's going on? You're getting ready. We're getting ready for your, this will be coming out while you're in Finland, actually. First event.
Yes. 3-4 days headed out to the first big comp of the season. Super, super stoked about that. I don't even think there's going to be a bubble there. I think we're going to have fans. I think it's going to be a pretty normal-ish competition. So pretty excited to skate in front of a crowd again, for sure. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, that's awesome. Very excited for you. It's going to be great. You guys, you and Kirst are going to kick some butt. And just excited to watch you guys compete. And then that means that we're rolling really close to Skate America 2 weeks after that. And then Skate Canada for you. And just the, right after that, we just start going bang, bang, bang to each event.
Yes, yes. It's that time. And it's going to start rolling quick. We're going to blink and it's going to be December. So let's just stay present here and enjoy the next 2-3 months of action.
Yes, sir. All right. So, Mike, who do we have on here today with us?
We've got another special guest. We got a lot of special guests here for you. But today we have 4-time national bronze medalist, 4 continents bronze medalist, world and Olympic competitor, and one of my close friends, Paige Lawrence Champion. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Anytime. Thanks for coming on with us. How have you been?
Really great, actually. Yeah, really, really great. Thanks for asking.
No problem. So for people who don't know too much about you, Paige, give us just a quick little background. Where are you from? Obviously, we said it, you're a pair. I don't think we said it. You are a pair skater, but just give us a quick little background for our listeners.
Yeah, sure. So I'm of the older skating variety. I guess retired 7 years ago, coming up on 8, which is just like mind blowing to me because it doesn't feel that long. But essentially, my story is probably similar to like a lot of people's. I started skating at a really young age because I loved it. I grew up in a really small town in Saskatchewan, And so pretty much everyone learns to skate. And when I was nine, my parents gave me the opportunity to go and work with a coach that was, a little bit better than what was in my regular town. And long story short, that was the coach that ended up taking me to the Olympics. So she obviously knew what she was doing to some degree. I started skating pairs with Rudy Swiegers when I was 15. And we had a 9 year long career together, representing Canada at a bunch of competitions that you mentioned, and really created a, well, an awesome skating career in a somewhat uncommon way. We trained in a remote small town. We didn't really move to one of the big training centers. We kind of just created success for us in the way that was authentic to us. And then we were fortunate enough to compete in the 2014 Olympics, which was a dream come true for me. And I retired shortly after that and started this journey really that took me to where I am now, where I own my own business and have created a life outside of sport. But really, when I look back, it's been a pretty wild ride up until now.
So yeah, definitely a pretty unique journey. I don't know too many other high performance Olympians that take their coach from 9 years old all the way to ending their career. So shout out to Mrs. P-hole. Hopefully she's doing good. And how was that going with her the whole way? She definitely got to know you guys pretty well. So I assume that was definitely one of the strengths of the situation.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that that was a huge asset. I also feel like I learned a lot from Patty in the sense that she's a self-made woman, and we were very much a self-made team because of that. And I often say now in my now life that we are a testament to resourcefulness over resources because we didn't have a ton of resources. You know what I mean? We trained in a town of 250 people. Like there were more cows around than there were human beings. So you could imagine that we didn't have a lot of the high-tech training facilities that a lot of the like city centers held. Add on top of that, Patty had never coached pair teams before. We were literally her first actual pair team. Like when we started, we were watching videos from a little Russian lady called How to Become a Pair Skater or something like that, like how to be a pair skater. And it's hilarious, that it's actually like it's a perfect setup for a great joke, but it was actually our career. You know what I mean? We just learned because we wanted to find answers for how to do the things. You know what I mean? We were so committed to a goal that we just found solutions, and I think that's really a testament to the approach that Patty brought with her coaching. She was a constant learner. She was committed to her own growth. She was committed to our growth. She was the biggest advocate for bringing in people outside of herself to offer us solutions. And I think those reasons are why we went to the Olympics, is because we adopted that learner's mindset, that growth mindset. And fast forward through those 9 years, I really truly can't think of something that served us any better than being a solution-focused athlete. Because as you guys know, sport presents a lot of problems and issues, right? Like there's never a season that's just like, oh, that was easy, like went perfect.
Yeah, there's no Staples button. That was easy for the entire season.
Yeah, exactly. I wish there was. Gosh. So I do think it was Patty's approach to coaching and her just her way of being that helped us become the team that could just continuously find new solutions to all the problems that came up. So she's a big testament to our success.
Speaking of finding solution, now post-pandemic, there is a lot of coaches, a lot of people working through Zoom, working on via the internet through video chat. You guys were doing that 10 years ago, way before any of this ever happened.
Before Zoom
So,
was cool, we were
yeah,
doing
exactly.
it.
Yeah, so like how did you guys kind of like come about that, or is that just one of those resources you got like Patty just kind of thought of instead of, because it's not like you're able to always just go and train at other places and then come back, it gets expensive, but
Yeah.
it's a little bit more of like you know, we see it from this side. Everybody sees the great purpose of FaceTime and Zoom right now, but.
Yeah. So again, I think it was born out of a little bit of necessity and a little bit of creativity. So we did work with, like, I'm going to call them pair expert coaches. You know what I mean? Like people that really were grounded in this. We worked with a bunch of different people, like Bruno, we worked with when we were super young. We had a coach in Florida, Lyndon Johnson, that we would travel to. Our choreographers were like in Toronto or Edmonton. And so distance was just a part of our formula for success. And so we had to learn early on how to make it work for us. Otherwise it would have worked against us. And so travel was obviously one solution to solve for that problem. And the other one was, how could we still have these people's opinions and expertise in our lives without us having to travel 10 hours to get them? And so we use FaceTime, right? Is it perfect? Is it the best case scenario? Well, no. But did it do the job? Was it good enough for us to move the needle forwards? The answer is yes. And I think that honestly, sometimes in the world and elite sports or high performance cultures, it's really easy to get distracted by the, oh, what's everyone else doing? Or what's the best case solution here? Oh, I don't have that. Well, shoot, what do I do? And I actually think that a more important question to be asking is like, what is the good enough answer for us to use right now? What is a good enough solution for us to move the needle, right? What's going to make us progress? Because that's really all that it comes down to, right?
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I always thought this, it was kind of a funny thing. We've talked to with a couple, like one of our old strength and conditioning coaches. And before, obviously, the pandemic hit, and that became a lot of things. A lot of people even now are still doing everything off of Zoom for sessions and everything with a lot of like fitness related things. And, you know, Mike and I's old strength and conditioning coach, Maria Mountain, was doing that way before the pandemic, same thing, because she started her own online goalie business and was trying to work with goalies across the world and across Canada. And then same thing with us. If we were in the gym and like looking at our program, I don't know what to do with this, you could call her, or, and she was a very busy person, but she would just FaceTime you and show you how to do the exercise and then go from there. So it definitely, you know, there was people doing it before, but it's like what works for you best for you as the athlete and what's going to help you in the present moment, right?
I actually think that's beautiful. What is best for you right now? You know, what's not best for everyone? It's not really about anybody else. It's really about what's best for you in that moment. I think there's a lot of, really, I think it's a very empowering way to look at your life. What's the best for me right now, right?
What kind of struggles did you deal with training mostly on your own in a small town? What were some of the more difficult moments that you had to go through?
Oh, gosh. Tough question. So relating to a small town, training kind of remotely, I think it did offer some unique issues that we had to work through, or like challenges it presented. One of the ones that jumps out to me is, as a competitor, there's a lot of perks to training with other people, right? When you're competitive in nature, you thrive off of your surroundings, you thrive off of what other people are doing, you feed off of that energy. And so training by ourselves or with skaters who are competing, you know, like pre-novice, novice levels or junior, there wasn't a lot of that competitive energy from others. And so really the challenge there was for us to have to generate our own enthusiasm and our own competitiveness and our own hunger every single day. Whereas sometimes that's just given to you when you show up and you're like, oh, I don't want to train today. And then like Trent goes and like does a clean program and you're like, well, screw it. Like I got to do it too.
Yep.
You know? And it's so great. Sure. I love that competitiveness and it does raise the bar, but we didn't have that a lot of the time unless we went somewhere else. So I would say that was probably one of the biggest issues or challenges, not issues. One of the biggest challenges for us was being able to raise our own bar of excellence, right? We had to be very self-motivated. Other things, like we didn't have access to our choreographers throughout the season. A lot of teams, they get touches. I mean, you guys know, you both travel at times for choreography. And when it's a drivable distance, that's one thing. And when it's a flight to Toronto, that's not just something you do all of the time, right? And so that became something that we had to really like strategize and work around. Wasn't a deal breaker, but was definitely something that we had to take into serious consideration. I would say like those are two situational challenges that we had.
And then, so how did you guys work through those situational challenges? Like, what was your kind of setup or mindset for each other, for the team, to motivate yourselves every day when keep that competitiveness? Like, because there's people, there's still lots of athletes across the country who train by themselves, and same thing, need to find that, you know, that competitiveness to keep going every day, even though they're by themselves.
Totally. Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think that it comes down to setting really clear goals, right? So not only the like long-term objectives of what you want to achieve at the end of the year, but breaking it down into what does that mean tangibly I have to accomplish this week. So finding ways to present challenges or setting yourself up for situations where you have to step up. I think that's really important. I would also say it kind of comes down to you taking a lot of ownership for your own success, right? Because you're always presented with choices. One, do I show up and train hard today, or do I slack off and take the easy route? And I think what comes to be really important when you train by yourself is an awareness of what you're choosing, right? Because when you have other people around you, I think it pushes you to choose the, ooh, I want this. I'm going to really work hard for it today. So the decision is easier to make and it's trickier to slack off, right? But when you're by yourself, I think a lot of people tend to make that decision subconsciously. They don't realize that they're making it until the end of the year and they're like, oh, I probably could have worked harder, right? And so I would encourage people who are training by themselves to really do a quick self-assessment as they're rolling into practice or maybe mid-practice and being like, how am I showing up today? Is this me 10 out of 10 really wanting to get better or to achieve my goals? Or is this me kind of slacking off?
Yeah, for sure. You know, we used to train by ourselves for a while as well, Evelyn and I. And even some days too, when, you know, we have lots of teams that we train with now, but there's some days where you're still like same thing. You're not just always like every single day is just like, oh, I'm giving everything my 100% all the time, doing everything I need to. So you need to check in and remind yourself for those things. And I know for myself, one of the things that I do is I have some we use visualization a lot. So I have some like dreams and some visualizations of things I want to be able to do or my goals that I want to accomplish. And those are kind of like I play those through my head. And, you know, doing these things is going to help me get to that spot or feel that way at that time.
Yeah.
So I know it's a big thing to check in, even for, like you said, obviously, yes, very important when you're by yourself, but even some days, you know, people ask, like everybody always says to me, like, it feels like I just love to go to the gym just because I want to go to the gym. There's some days I don't want to go to the gym. They're right. I love going to the gym and working out, but there's still some days I don't want to go to the gym and work out and have to motivate myself. And so that's one thing I do. I don't know about you, Mike, if there's anything like that that you've kind of used for some days where you don't feel like putting in the effort you need to.
Journaling, getting it down on paper. Your thoughts hit that paper, it's so much easier to take action upon them. It's makes it a lot more difficult to slack off when you have that written, tangible right in front of you on that piece of paper. So that's definitely something that I've done a little bit in the past, but this year, Kirsten and I have started doing much, much more with our strength and conditioning coach and osteopath, Patrick McGee. He's got us journaling a lot, and it's definitely helping.
I think that's really awesome. And again, I think both of those, well, all of the things that we're saying really reflects a self-awareness, because the more aware of where you're at, the easier it is for you to see if you need to make any adjustments, right? Because if you don't know what you don't know, so if you're not checking in with yourself, how are you supposed to ask yourself to do something different or more or less in some cases, right? So that's kind of what I'm hearing us all say, is that really that self-check-in can be a really powerful tool for anyone who's pushing for high performance, because that check-in allows them to say, hey, Where am I at? What do I need?
Yep. And that goes, just thinking about it, that goes for more than just like trying to get through workouts and training. Like that goes for sleep and nutrition too. Like I think one of the things that I've realized in the past year, I have the Mike and I have the Whoop things, but how much sleep plays into your training. You might not think it does. You're like, oh, I'm getting enough sleep, but like actually quality sleep makes your training days and makes you feel so much better.
Totally. Yeah. I think it's awesome. Dig in, carry that awareness, be able to make the appropriate changes.
Awesome. So you went from small town, made it to the Olympics. Absolutely amazing making it to the Olympics in general. So tell us about your Olympic experience. What was that like for you guys?
I feel like when people ask that question, and maybe like Mike, you can agree or disagree here, but I feel like it's often a very polarizing answer. It's either, oh my gosh, that was the best experience of my life, or wow, that was such a missed opportunity. Like I really have a lot of regrets. Because like you work for so long, it means so much to us. It doesn't come around very often. Like the list is long. But I feel very fortunate to say that it was one of the best experiences of my life. I really truly, I mean, I know I'm supposed to say that it was my wedding day or something like that. You know what I mean? I haven't had a kid yet, so maybe that will trump it. But I really do feel as though the Olympics were some of the best days of my life, and both on the ice and just in the village, enjoying the experience. And so I feel very fortunate to be able to say that. So that's like a broad answer. I'm happy to talk about different areas or aspects, but I'll let you guys ask the questions.
No, that's pretty good. Whatever we just like to hear things about. Let's talk about like how did they like how were they so different? Like were they the different just good feelings because you got to experience all the different sports and athletes and you guys were just skating well, or did that just feed into one each other?
Yeah. So I'm hearing you say, like, why was it such a good experience, right? I think let's talk skating wise first. They definitely weren't perfect skates. I would have said I would have preferred for them to have been flawless and like clean. We made mistakes in both programs. But what I loved about the experience and that made it so special to me is I really feel like those were two of my best performances. So they weren't clean, they weren't perfect, but they were two of my best. And I really feel like I showed up, as you guys know, competing is hard. Like competing under pressure is really freaking hard. And I really feel like both those performances, I managed to show up and get into that zone where it felt easy, right? Like the zone, that flow state. And both of those performances were really truly the pinnacle of what I had trained for. And I remember, I mean, I think a testament to the experience is after our short program, I got off the ice and the first, I mean, you can still watch it on like the recordings on YouTube. I was like, that was so fun. Like those were the first words out of my mouth when I got off the ice after a short program at the Olympics was that was so fun. And so to me, that's huge, right? Number one, that was my takeaway from that experience. Secondly, like our long program, it was a very bizarre, get a little woo with me for a second here. It was a very bizarre experience because I am typically the skater that was very like type A. It was all details. I was checking things off. I was thinking about what I had to do. Like it was like that details. And in that free program, there was a moment. This sounds so corny, but whatever. There was a moment in our like spiral sequence where I was just so aware of like all the people that had helped me. It was like one of those like time stopped moments where I was aware of all the gratitude. I've never skated grateful before, like competed grateful, and I felt gratitude on the ice. And I remember like breaking character and like smiling an earnest smile at Rudy and being like, this is so cool, you know? And the music ended, and I literally wanted to stay on the ice and just curtsy for forever because I was like, this is the best moment. It's never gonna get any better. Like I'm soaking this up, and like people laughed at me. I think I curtsied like four or five times. I was like, we're not done. I'm not getting off the ice. So, I mean, I think that says a lot about that experience for me, right? Perfect? No, but perfect moment? Like, yeah.
How did you prepare leading into the games to hit the ground running in that short program, as you said, entering right away into that flow state? Because nothing about the games is like any other competition. The back of house, the change room, other than the actual ice pad, every single aspect about it is different than any other competition you've done for the past 20 years leading into it. So how did you prepare yourself for that? Because I found that difficult in the short program. For the long program, I obviously did a much better job getting into that flow state, but it was something that I found very difficult to do leading into the short program, just because nothing about it was familiar. Every aspect, the people, the village, was just 100% new experiences leading into that.
It 100, I can agree with wholeheartedly. It is very different. And every step of the way, you're like, it's just another skate, but you know, it's the freaking Olympics. Like, we're not dumb. You're not fooling yourself, right? You're like, okay, yeah, it's a skate at the Olympics. But I would say that I actually had a really interesting experience leading up to the games. So we qualified in January at Nationals. The Olympics were in February. In September, leading up to it, I actually injured myself. And so I pulled my groin, strained a hamstring, and strained a psoas muscle. And so we had to really alter our training. I mean, I couldn't do hardly anything for a large chunk of time. And I had a really tough conversation with my sports psychologist early October. So I was having a pity party for myself. I was very angry, very frustrated. This was not on my plan. You know what I mean? Like, I felt desperate. And he essentially gave me some tough love and was like, you can keep doing what you're doing and you're not going to go to the Olympics. Or we can shift our perspective here and just start to take ownership of what you can do and do it really well. And he said, what is this giving you an opportunity to do that you normally would have missed? Now, that was a pretty shell-shocking question to ask me because, like, what opportunity have I been given? I haven't been given a freaking opportunity. I have an injury. You're dumb. But after we talked a little bit more, I worked past that. And it was such a game changer for me because it allowed me to say, like, okay, great, what can I do and how can I do it better? And it gave me this perspective to stop focusing on everything that's out of my control, stop focusing on the what I cannot do, and to really zero in on what I could do. So at first it was just like cross cuts. So I would go on the ice and I would skate and do edges and stroking for hours a day. We would do walk through our, we would skate our program with no other purpose other than to emote differently or to tell a story differently. I worked on like my hand placements. Like, you guys know me. Like, I wasn't the most delicate, graceful, beautiful skater of all time. So this was giving me the opportunity to work on some of those like finer moments. And I promise there's a point to this story. It's as I kept going and we got closer and closer to the game or to the qualifying event in the games, I got to add more things back in. But what I had learned in that earlier spot was that I really loved figure skating, which sounds so bizarre to me. I really loved doing my program, which I would never have said in the months leading up to it. I'd never say, oh, I can't wait to do my free program. Oh, I can't wait to do my short. I just love it. It's so much fun, right? Because it was just like, oh, it's so stressful. Like, I got to do a clean program today. Like, oh, this is hard. I got to focus on my triple toe and yada, yada. And that gave me a whole rewiring that I really learned to reappreciate. Reappreciate? I don't know if that's a word. I really learned to appreciate figure skating again. And so the point of all this is that when I went into the Olympics, I felt the pressure and I felt like wanting to slip back in my old habits of, oh my gosh, I have to make sure that I'm like doing this into the element. I really make sure like I check my arms when I'm in a triple toe and like da da da. And instead, I was like, pump the brakes, Paige. This is an opportunity for you to get to go and enjoy your programs in a moment that you've worked really hard for forever. Wouldn't it be a shame to go out there and be so stressed about the things that you forgot about the moment. And it was just a really great reframe for me that I stepped on the ice and it was like, I am going to go live this moment up. And it was almost like permission to do that. And so I think throughout all of that really long story, I remembered when I stepped onto the ice that I love doing what I do and that this was a chance and an opportunity for me to get to go and share that love with a bunch of other people. And it was such a great reframe for me. That I think that that's what set the stage for me to say that was so fun. Does
that make sense? You know, that's a good story? Yeah, it makes yeah, very good story. It makes complete sense. And, you know, I think a lot of people don't realize as we're elite athletes, we all start this for a reason. 90% of the time, I would say we start our sports because we just love what we're doing.
Yeah.
Right? I know that's how I ended up doing. I was going to be a hockey player. Here I am. I love figure skating. I love pair skating. Like, there's nothing else I would trade for it in the day. But sometimes with the pressure and everything like that, we forget how much we actually just love that part of it or the reason why we fell fully in love with the sport. So it's really awesome. And it's like great that you got to experience that fully, that love, especially obviously at the Olympics. But it's a good reminder, I think, even for us to remember, like, as we go to training and everything, that we're in a better state of mind and in a better spot as athletes when we remember we enjoy and we love doing what we're doing and we're not just doing it because we need to be perfect, we need to be the best. Like, that's obviously part of the reason why we're competitive and do well, but we still need to step back and listen to our other self that just loves to do what we're doing.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that's a really nice takeaway.
Outside of figure skating at the games, what are some of the other highlights of your experience there in 2014?
Oh my gosh. One would be the Canadian women's gold medal hockey game. It was so epic. And I'd never felt more a part of a team environment because it was a huge crowd of us, like of Canadians, and there was a huge crowd of the US team beside us. And if you guys remember or don't remember, but Canada was actually down and it was like the third period and they were really struggling. It was so close. And I don't know who started it or why, but it was getting like kind of ticking down and you could tell that everyone was like, morale is low. And someone in our section was just like, let's friggin' pump them up. Like, let's change the vibe. And so we just started cheering, like all of us. Like loud screaming, hollering. And the girls started picking up on that and feeding off that energy. And I think someone missed a net, like on it, right? There was the US missed it.
Net. That hit the post from the other end on an empty net.
Yes. And so we were all going nuts. And then the US team beside us started going nuts and it went into overtime. And then we won, which was huge. And then all of the girls came over and were like hitting the glass and like pointing and like they were sharing in the moment with all of us. And so it just felt so Canadian. That's something that will always stand out to me forever and ever. Because it was one of the first times that I felt like I was a part of something bigger than me, you know?
And I mean, especially because it was hockey.
Gold. Yeah, we won gold, you know?
We won gold in hockey. It's perfect.
That'd be one of my favorite moments from the Olympics. But overall, I just loved, you woke up every single day and the energy and excitement was tangible, right? Like you could reach out and touch it. And I had a really cool experience one of my first nights there. It was in the athlete lounge. And you guys know me, I'm a fairly outgoing gal. I'm pretty chatty with people. And I found myself definitely having a case of imposter syndrome. Like, who am I to be at the Olympics? I'm Paige Lawrence from Kennedy, Saskatchewan. I don't belong here. And I sat, gave myself a nice little tough love conversation. I was like, get your butt out there, go and meet some people. And so I sat down and started playing cards. And I started talking to this guy next to me. And he was so normal. And I felt like we had a lot of things to like that were the same. He was from a small town, I was from a small town. I just felt like, oh, here's another person who probably felt out of whack, right? So that made me feel more at home. And I went back to my room later that night and I was on Facebook because Facebook was cool back then, not Instagram or Twitter or TikTok. Which shows how old I am. And I remember like seeing some BuzzFeed article pop up, so I was reading it and I saw the guy's face and I was like, oh my gosh, I met him, like cool. And turns out he was like Olympic medalist in speed skating, he'd won the world before, like all these things, and I'm just like, oh my God, Paige, you're such an idiot. How do you not know this guy from so far, right? Like you're a dodo bird. And the next day, I saw him walking in the village, and I walked up to him, and I was like, oh my gosh, why didn't you tell me you were so good? I feel like an idiot. And he looked at me, and he's like, well, Paige, like, we're at the Olympics. We're all pretty good. It sounds like such a dumb story, but it was literally life-changing for me at the games, because what that did for me is it gave me, like, the light bulb went off, and I was like, oh my gosh, everyone here is just a regular human like me. Like, duh. You know what I mean? They're not these like cutout models that were born to be superstar athletes. They were just kids that found something that they loved, worked really hard, went through a lot of struggles, and went to the Olympics. And so for me, one of my favorite things about the Olympics is that I just walked up to every single person as a human rather than an athlete. And I was like, hi, I'm Paige. What's your name? And so I met tons of people, amazing athletes, superstar humans, who are all just regular people to me. And it changed the game for me at the experience. I felt like I belonged and met some really amazing people. And I just felt like there were no barriers. These were all my people. And I think that that really made the experience pretty special for me as well.
That's super awesome. Yeah, well, you're a pretty outgoing person, Paige, so that makes complete sense. But yeah, no, it's a pretty insane, amazing experience. Hopefully we'll be getting to experience that one day. Let's go.
Yes, I'm here for it. I'm here for both of you.
Thank you.
Is this where you met one of your business partners also? Is where did you come in contact with Mrs. Jones?
Mrs. Jones, Ms. Jones, she and I met, she and I don't even think that's grammatically correct. We met at the Olympics. She was an Olympic luge athlete. And to be honest, we didn't become like fast friends. We were just more of acquaintances. I remember bumping into her a few different times. She was hanging out with some of the figure skaters, and we ran into each other a few times in the post-Olympic activities. And then I guess a year later, I moved to Calgary where she was living, and we hung out a few more times, and we just kind of like became friends at first. And it was just last year that we decided to create this online course together. So since retiring, I've become a high performance coach for entrepreneurs and elite athletes, and she has become a holistic nutritionist and chef. And so we're both on these entrepreneurial journeys, and we were having conversations about how to create high performance habits in our own businesses currently and with the people that we are working with. And we just kept coming back to something that we know as athletes, that what you eat, drink, and think really impacts the results you're able to achieve, right? How you fuel your body and your mind are a big component of what you achieve. And so we kept talking about these things, her with the food and the drinks, and me with like the mindset and mental habits. And we're like, how do other people achieve success when they don't know this stuff, when they don't have Olympic backgrounds or high performance sporting backgrounds? How do they do this stuff? And that led to the, well, why don't we come up with some way to help them? And so we built an online course together. It's called the Podium Performance Program. It's a 10-week course where we look at helping you go from really being uncertain about what you're doing, being stressed and frazzled and overworked and not fueling yourself properly. And we go to helping you work through, like, crush your goals without burnout in a way that you have more energy, more time, more happiness, feeling better in your body and your mind. And it's been really fun. We've launched the course twice now. We're currently with our second group of people, and it's been pretty amazing to see people show up and start to see how powerful of a trio it is to start taking ownership, really, of how your body and your mind are working. It comes back to what we talked about originally, that self-awareness. How am I doing? What do I need to be doing better? What do I need to change to be doing better? And that's really what the course helps to teach people.
That's awesome. So where can people find out more information about that, if they want to join or just want to know more about it?
Yeah, great question. So you can follow us on Instagram. It's at podium.performance.program, or you can follow me on Instagram or Ariane on Instagram. Maybe I can send you some of that and you can put them in the show notes.
That would be perfect. Thank you.
Perfect.
So obviously you transitioned out of sport. Now, how did you find this? Like, how did you transition out of sport into this new career path? And, you know, what recommendations do you have for people who are transitioning out of sport? Mike and I, we talk about this with a lot of our guests. It's a big topic right now, and people are looking for help for transitioning out of sport. And, like, what would you recommend for them?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's a big question. Speaking from my own experience, I did not transition well. I retired kind of unexpectedly. I didn't have a plan for after sport, and I really wasn't prepared for what came with it. And so I really struggled with a loss of identity. I had a lot of shame around retiring. You know, it was like from the highest of highs to really the lowest of lows. And I felt very lost. I didn't have a purpose. I didn't have a plan. I went from being able to tell you what I was doing next year on this Thursday to being like, I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow, which is a very jarring reality to wake up to. And I also realized that there's not a lot of people that, number one, think that way or have lived that way. So there weren't a lot of people that could relate to my problems. They're like, you don't know what you're doing next year on a Thursday. Like, no one does, Paige. And I'm like, but I used to. And I liked that, you know? So I really did struggle for the first 2 years probably. And so my path was I really started to get, I thought about where I wanted to be 10 years from now. And I didn't have a lot of answers I could fill in, but I knew a few things. I knew I wanted, and that's where I started. So I would encourage people, if you're super lost, to think like, what are the things you do know you want in your future? And so mine was simply like, I wanted to be happy. I wanted to have some freedom and autonomy over my own schedule. I wanted to be doing something that I loved. That was it. Not a lot of direction there, right? Wasn't like, oh, great, you're going to become a doctor. And so from there, it was really just trial and error where I started to make decisions to see how in alignment with those three things they were. Were they making me happier? Were they giving me freedom and autonomy over my schedule? And was I doing something that I loved? And if the answer was no, I made a shift. And then I tried something else. And if the answer was yes, I felt a little bit closer, but not quite right. Great. Where am I making an adjustment? And so I really just started to follow the yeses. And that sounds beautiful and whimsical. And it was really hard. You know, it was a lot of not knowing and a lot of just trying new things. And really, quite honestly, I just followed the yeses into this new career. I was reading in a book once, mentioned positive psychology. I was like, that sounds interesting. I Googled it. I was like, wow, that's so cool. I found a course that was teaching about positive psychology. I signed up. That led to one module on life coaching where I was like, that was really cool. I love helping people. I'm gonna take that. I took that. I was like, I really like this, but that wasn't enough and it wasn't quite right. Did some more digging, went to grad school for executive coaching, and that felt much more closer to what I wanted to do, but it wasn't quite right. And so I started my own business being like, this feels like where I want to be. And over the last 3 years now, I've just kept refining. Well, this is a little bit better. This is a little bit closer. And I feel like right now I'm in a place that I really am happy. I have freedom and autonomy over my schedule, and I love what I'm doing, which is pretty awesome to say. It's also 7 years after I retired. But I think to circle back to, you know, like, what's your advice for people? One, there's no right or wrong way to retire. There really is just like where you're at. And I think that people need to honor themselves to say like, this is where I'm at, and it's going to be messy and it's going to be tricky, or maybe it's going to be easy, whatever. Drop the comparison, honor where you're at, and start from there. Two, I would say if I could go back and tell myself one thing, it'd be you don't have to feel shame about retirement. And if you are, talk to somebody, right? Like I would encourage people, regardless of, this is a better way of saying it, regardless of what you're feeling, I would encourage you to talk to somebody about it, because it is a life-jarring, life-changing experience. And I think that a lot can be gained from having people on your support team who are just there to help. And number three, I would just say to get messy with it and to follow the yeses, right? It's not going to be a perfect plan. You're not going to be able to tell me a year from now what you're going to be doing on a Thursday. And to embrace that and to just say, like, let's get messy. Let's follow the yeses and let's make adjustments based off of what's working and what's not working. You don't have to get it right the first time.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. I love that, actually. Just follow the yeses. It's a really, really, really cool and like easy thing to, not easy thing to do, but easy thing to say and to remind yourself of and keep rolling with. And especially in a situation like that, when you've been doing one thing for so long and you don't know what you're going to like you can just stumble upon something that you never really know you have, were passionate about and love, and then you're there. So that's really awesome, Paige. That's a really cool, like, way, positive way to go through it.
Great. I'm happy that that resonated. Like, other people might tell you something completely different. So again, there's no right or wrong way, but I think that's maybe some helpful things to get you started or to be thinking about.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for that. So I got to say, this has been really, really awesome. We can't thank you enough for jumping on the podcast with us. You've been some great experiences and stories, and you're so positive. And I think that's what people love about you. So we can't thank you enough. But before we go, we got some other things we want to ask you first. So first off, do you have a book recommendation for our listeners?
So the book that changed my life, that taught me about positive psychology, is called The Happiness Advantage. I think it is a very interesting book. It's, I think, contrary to a lot of how society primes us to want to operate. And I would encourage people to read it.
Definitely going to check it out.
I think it's by Sean Anker. He also has a great TED Talk. If you're not a reader, watch the TED Talk.
Oh, sweet. That's good. We do like, that's why we're doing podcasts. We like listening to things.
Good. Definitely going to check that out.
Yeah.
Let's finish off with some fun rapid fire light questions here to end this fun hour off. Very educational. Thank you. That last answer definitely was gave me a lot to think about.
Awesome.
So thank you.
Yeah.
So rapid fire questions, summer or winter? Which do you prefer?
Gosh, spring.
not even an answer. Makes her own.
On brand. Perfect.
Great. What is your favorite animal?
A dog. Or a horse. Or a mini donkey.
Okay.
All three.
Hey, it's just rap, but I'm just giving you as it comes to my brain.
Did you have any pre-competition superstitions?
I didn't have superstitions, but I always ate a rice cracker with peanut butter on it. Just because I liked it. And it also kept out of my face.
Didn't you have one in between the warm-up and your skate?
Yeah, I had two. I had like a little sandwich, and I would eat one before the 6-minute warm-up, and then I would eat one in between the 6-minute warm-up when I skated.
That's awesome. Sorry, my Bilbo.
Sorry, my dog is getting in the way.
Getting in the way of my chair and knocking my microphone everywhere. Okay. Favorite kind of goldfish crackers?
I don't eat goldfish crackers, so I would say original. I don't know what flavors there are. Sorry, guys.
There's a ton of flavors, but just the regular cheddar is awesome. That's the only one I like, but
he's a little too healthy for the goldfish crackers.
That's fair.
What is your favorite winter sport other than figure skating?
To watch or do?
Both.
I've recently learned that I really like downhill skiing. It's super fun and thrilling, so I get my adrenaline kicks out of that. I'm just gonna go with that. I like skiing.
Perfect.
Cool. Now, what's your favorite summer sport?
I'll answer this one to watch. I really like synchronized diving or some of the gymnastics. But I should also probably say I also enjoy watching rodeo because that's the one I watch the most in the summers because of my husband.
And for our final question, what is your favorite rodeo event?
Oh, bareback riding. Shout out to Richmond.
Ooh. For those who don't know, her husband is a world-class champion bareback rider. Make sure I got
Funny.
it
They're like, what does your husband do? And I'm like, he's a bareback rider. And people that have never heard of rodeo, they're like,
right.
sorry, excuse me. So I started just saying he's a rodeo athlete, and that has less question marks and judgmental looks that I get from that.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
He's really good at it, either which way. So
Insanely
insanely
good.
good at it.
Yes, I would agree. Cool. Cool.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Paige, for coming on with us. This has been awesome. I'm more than sure our listeners are going to take a lot out of this conversation. So thank you again. I know Mike and I both took a lot out of it. So thank you so much.
Yeah,
Thank you.
it was a lot of fun being here with you. Sorry I cut you off, Mike. You talk, then I'll talk.
All good. Thank you very much. We know you have a busy schedule. It was a little bit tough for you to fit us in. We appreciate you taking an hour out of your day for us.
I really appreciated being on here with you guys. It was fun to talk about figure skating and life and work and all the things with you guys. And I love that you guys are doing this podcast. I think it's a really cool space, and then you guys are going to build an awesome community.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Paige. So, ice labbers, get to work in your labs and
Peace and love, and be kind to one another.
This episode of the Ice Lab podcast was produced by Trent Michaud and Michael Marinaro.
Music produced by Hugo Schwinard.
If you haven't already, share with your friends and leave a review.
Follow us on Instagram at Ice Lab Podcast for more information and to stay up to date.